This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to the first big picture for the year, part of the Financial Sense News Hour, where we try to make sense of all of the dots out there. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler here with you. And as tradition would want, we do a two-part series for the first two shows of every year. The first part, both involve making predictions for the year to come. The first is basically what the street says. We'll come back to that in just a second, what Wall Street says. And then the second part next week will be our predictions for the coming year. 2017, it was spectacular for the markets. Rather wild election, also in the political arena, which caused a lot of impact and euphoria in the markets. GDP is up to 3%. The stock market up double digits, talking about euphoria. This was a year where just about everybody made money. So now the question is, having come through such a year, will 2018 be more of one, the same, two, less robust, or three, a year of storms and volatility? So what we do on the first program of every year is we look at three different sections here. We examine the consensus for 2018. The first part, the Wall Street big firms, what they're thinking and saying. Number two, those people who think outside the box, those forecasts. Those are some of the more interesting ones. And number three, big surprises or black swans, which could come bursting across our horizon. And then when we get done doing all of that, what are the common threads between them all? So cracking my knuckles and listening with bated breath, Jim, here we go.
We had 3% growth in the third quarter, which was besieged by two hurricanes. I think the underlying strength of the U.S. economy is very real.
This is before we even get anything like an infrastructure plan or before...
Before the tax cuts kick in.
Mm-hmm. So at what point do we see something a lot greater than that then, if, as you say, tax cuts and deregulation are going to really press GDP growth higher?
It's going to be hard for us to grow much more. I think we'll head toward 4, but I don't think we'll get there.
When?
Well, this year.
This year. Okay. The voice of Byron Wien. All right. Where do we go, Jim?
Well, if we take a look at, before we begin 2018, I think it's going to be rather interesting to take a look at what about 2017? Because as we do at the beginning of the year, we take a look at, all right, what is the thinking? Where do people think the economy is heading? Where do they think the stock market's going to head? Are there any black swans or things that we should be focused on that nobody's really talking about? And if we take a look at 2017, well, quite honestly, there were a lot of things the economists got right. For example, the unemployment rate was forecasted to come in at 4.5%. We actually hit 4.1%, so it went way lower than most people thought. On average monthly job creation, it was forecasted at 166. It was better than expected at 174, but lower than the year before of 188. And so economists were expecting that there would be a deceleration in job growth. Instead, the unemployment rate went lower, and we created more jobs than anticipated. On GDP, it was forecasted to come in at 2.4. We actually did 2.3. So very, very close. They nailed it there. Fed rate hikes, it was projected 3, and that's what we got. We got 3, actually. Bond yields, they were off on this, as they were on many other things. Bond yields, they thought would be up to 2.9% with the Fed raising interest rates. Instead, we ended at 2.486, so call it about roughly 2.5. Crude oil prices was much better. The average consensus was 56.31. We came in at 58.47. Housing starts at 1.26 million. We came in at 1.21. And very few economists expected a recession with a 16% probability. So overall, John, I would say the hit rate on the economy was fairly predictable, and they were on the mark.
Now, what about the stock market? I really don't think many people were expecting the double-digit gains that we saw last year, and the euphoria toward the year end was rather, not astounding, I'm trying to find the right word, exhilarating, there you go.
Yeah, and I would include ourselves in that list. You know, we thought the stock market would be up, but certainly nowhere near what we achieved with, what, almost 19% in the S&P and 25% in the Dow. If you take a look at where I went back and I saved all the consensus. The consensus forecast for the S&P was roughly in a very tight range, 2350 to 2400. The high side was 2500. We actually came in at 2,673, so no one really expected the market to do what it actually did, and quite honestly, what it's actually doing already, and this is just the first week. And one of the reasons that there was a lot of low expectations for the market was, number one, if we remember, the economy in the last 8 years barely was able to grow at 2%. In fact, the first quarter of the year, we were under 2%. The Fed was going to raise interest rates. They raised interest rates in the last month of December in 2016, and the Fed raised interest rates, or was projected to raise interest rates in January, which they did. And then also, I don't think anybody was expecting much of the Trump effect. Yes, well, there was a little bit of celebration at the end of 2016, but certainly nobody expected the market to do what it did in 2017. I mean, John, we didn't even have as much as a 2% correction. Normally, you know, a 10% correction in an extended bear market would be normal, and that would be part of the cycle. 5 or 6% is not out of line. John, we didn't get anything more than 2%. And so the other thing, too, was I think a lot of this was anticipated. Will they get tax reform through? Will they appeal Obamacare? And look at the tax reform. We didn't get that till the very, very end of the year. And where a lot of other things, quite honestly, just weren't coming in the way that people were expecting. A lot of the expectation was that a lot of these things would have been done a lot sooner when we got bogged down at the beginning of the year. So that's why I think everybody was more on the conservative side.
So I guess the big thing that we're all looking at is, what does all of this mean when we're looking at 2018 and the economy?
You know, you'll find that the expectations this year are a lot higher when it comes to the economy. In 2017, as I mentioned, they were forecasting 2.3. We came in at 2.4. For 2018, they're forecasting a 2.8% growth rate. Now, remember, for the last three quarters, we've been cruising at roughly about a 3% rate or better. They're forecasting for 2019 a 2.2%. So they're basically saying, look, we'll get the stimulus, but with these Fed rate hikes and the Fed continuing raising rates into 2019, sooner or later, this is going to hit the economy. So for the year, 2.8%. Consumer spending, they're projecting 2.6%, a little bit less than last year, which they might be on the low side, especially if these tax cuts get implemented in people's withholdings beginning in February. Residential investment, they're anticipated to go down, which doesn't make sense, down to 0.9%. And then it picks up in 2019 to 2.2. And maybe a lot of that is with anticipation of the lag effect for capital spending. Now, on capital spending for business, because most of those tax cuts were geared towards business, it's projected that that will finally fly this year at a rate of 6%. So overall, John, another good year for the economy and another good year for the unemployment rate. So things are looking pretty good.
But you do see four Federal Reserve rate hikes all the same.
Oh, yeah, I do see the Fed hiking rates, but I think the natural momentum of the economy is such that the economy will plow through it.
And once again, that's the voice of Byron Wien there. And he, by the way, is on the high side of economic growth rates.
Yeah, in fact, as we take a look, and we'll get into Byron Wien's 10 surprises for the year. One of them is stronger economic growth. He's probably on the higher side, and we'll get to that later on. But most believe, if you take a look at what the Fed is projecting, they're projecting that they'll raise rates three times this year, just like they did last year. And remember, last year was the first time in a four-year rate-raising cycle they actually went more than once, because they'd always begin the year with, we're going to raise interest rates so many times, and then something would happen in the markets or the economy or overseas, and they would hold off. So let's move on to the stock market forecast. And the consensus range this year is in the neighborhood of between 2750 and 2850, a nice round number very, very tight. The average for all forecasters is roughly about 2,800. The strongest is about 3,000. We've got Evercore, ISI Group. They're probably the highest. They're at 3,000. We have Bank of Montreal, BMO, is up at 2,950. We have, let me see. I'm trying to look here. Who's got the lowest forecast here? And that would be HSBC. They're forecasting the stock market would end at 2,650, basically go nowhere for the year or start out and end the year where it ended last year. So if you look at the average gain of 2,800, that would imply a 6% gain for the stock market. Throw in 2% for dividends, and you're talking about a 7 to 8% return for the stock market, which would be much, much better than what you more likely will earn in bonds this year. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about a lot of pension funds. And a lot of pension funds, my own state of California, CalPERS, the largest pension fund in the country, are allocating more money to the stock market. And one of the reasons they're doing is you take a look at these pension funds. They're assuming that they will earn a return of 7 to 8% a year in order to fund their pension liabilities, which are underfunded by estimates of 1.6 to 4 trillion. You're not going to make 7 or 8% in the bond market. Yes, you might make it if we get into a recession and the Fed slashes interest rates as they did, let's say, in 2008 and 2009, where interest rates plummeted when the Fed funds rate was at 5%. You can make a lot of money in the bond market, and some people have done quite well. But in terms of making 7 to 8% a year going forward, and especially if you have multiple trillions of dollars of unfunded liabilities, John, I just don't see, you know, where else are you going to get that? The only place you're going to get that is in the stock market.
So overall, I guess we're predicting what? Another good year for stocks in 2018, but not a real barn burner like it was in 2017?
It depends on who you're looking at. We'll get into this. This could be a year where a good majority of the gains come in the first half of the year. It could be a barn burner, just like it was in the final months of 2017 or the final quarter of 2017. And then as we get several rate hikes, you know, sooner or later, with as much debt as we have in our economy today, it's going to start weighing on the market. The main thing right now that Wall Street is looking at is the cut in the corporate tax rate from 35 to 20% and the big boost in earnings. I've read several research reports that earnings could grow at 20% a year over the next 2 years just from normalized earnings and a reduction in the tax rates from 35 to 20%. I mean, that is one big reduction in tax rates, and it's hoped that companies will take that money. You've seen it in the number of companies that were handing out bonuses at the end of the year. Many companies, Wells Fargo, are raising their minimum wage. So there's a hope, at least by forecasters, a lot of this will get translated into economic growth, consumption spending, and business spending. And of course, the other thing that we have is the repatriation of earnings. We'll talk later on what that might mean for the dollar, but also they're expecting with the money coming back, company will use it for corporate investment, M&A activity, corporate buybacks, and dividends. But I would say if nothing is done other than dividends and corporate buybacks, I would say there's going to be a lot of criticism of the tax reduction. And I don't think companies want to come under the heat. So that's why they're forecasting, at least on the economic front, you're going to see a pickup in capital investment. And many companies have announced so far that's exactly what they intend to do.
So another good year for the stock market. I'm assuming no major corrections. Last year, we didn't get any more than 2%.
You know, I would say the one difference this year is most analysts, if you read their research reports, are expecting a correction in the 5 to 10% range, which would be normal, by the way, to have a correction of that kind of magnitude, because that's normal. It's part of the cycle. What made 2017 so unusual is we never got anything more than 2%. I mean, anytime the market dipped, I don't care if the Dow was down a couple hundred points, you know, a day later or 2 days later, it would be right back up again. I mean, last year, if you look at a chart of the S&P and the Dow, it was kind of like an escalator, you know, going from the first floor to the second floor to the third floor. It was just a smooth upward trend. Very few hiccups. I think if you take a look at what everybody's expecting this year, a lot more volatility.
Yeah, okay. So if we do talk about a lot of volatility, what's going to spur that? Feds moves?
You know, it could be. Let's say inflation starts to pick up. All you need to do is have a Fed governor come out and say, you know, maybe that 3 rate hikes, we may be thinking 4 or more this year, given inflation. Or so, you know, it could be central bank. Definitely is would be one reason if there was a change in the wording or if, let's say, the Fed got more aggressive. I think a big area of volatility is going to be this fall when we come back for our congressional elections. The consensus is right now, and we'll get into this, is that the Democrats retake the House and they immediately begin to impeach President Trump. That would cause a lot of volatility and a shakeout in the market. And, of course, the unknown here this year is higher oil prices. Higher oil prices would lead to higher inflation, and that could also lead to a more aggressive stance or talk coming from the Fed. So, as I mentioned last year, we got no more than 2%. The market looked like an escalator. Don't be surprised if there's some kind of event this year that's something that comes out of the blue. Either somebody says something, somebody does something. Gosh, we got all kinds of geopolitical risk out there. And all of a sudden, you could see a flash crash or something that happens very suddenly, which would spook the markets. And of course, also maybe even spook the Fed itself. But this year is anticipated. It will not be as smooth and uneventful as 2017 was. 2017 was really eventful for not only the market gains, the extent of the rally, but also for the lack of volatility that existed throughout the whole year.
Although if we look at it, there are just such a huge number of cross currents right now that we should be expecting, I would think, some volatility, not just to say that we're not going to have that, especially if impeachment really comes over the horizon. I'm not sure what the grounds for that would be, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, there are already proposals by the Democrats to impeach the president, but, you know, that's not going to fly with a Republican-controlled House. But once again, that can change. And the Wall Street Journal did a great article about this. As a result of the repeal of the deductibility of state income taxes, Republican seats in states like California, New York, New Jersey, and others where the state taxes are high, those Republicans could be vulnerable. In fact, several of the Republicans here in my own state of California actually voted against the tax bill, so their opponents in this fall's election could not use that against them. Of course, they'll basically use that against the party, but nonetheless, the fall could be very volatile strictly on a political front.
All right, let's move on to the next segment of our projections, looking at everybody out there, the consensus, insights from top strategists, and some of the things that might be coming in from abroad that we're not noticing here.
You know, I'm going to start out with a forecast coming from the Financial Times out of London, and they look at both geopolitical events and also economic events. And, you know, their forecasts for 2017 were okay, but I want to concentrate on some of the political things because these are the things that the market doesn't usually focus on. And when they happen, you know, think of Brexit or any of those kind of things, and all of a sudden it shakes up the market. Or even look what the Trump presidency. One of them is Theresa May will retain the prime ministership in Great Britain. The UK economy will grow above many European economies. It was forecasted or thought that they wouldn't because of Brexit. They are forecasting the Democrats will take back the majority in the midterm elections in the House of Representatives by a squeaky minority, but Democrats will win the additional 24 seats, meaning they will have to hold on to all 12 Democratic districts that Mr. Trump won in the election and pick up 23 Republican districts that voted for Hillary Clinton plus 2 or more for good measure. So the Financial Times are saying that the Democrats recapture the House, next. They are predicting that once they capture the House, the first order of business will be to impeach the president beginning January of 2019. So, John, you could imagine if they do take the House and the first thing they start talking about is impeaching the president, what that would do to the financial markets. They're also saying that there's going to be a slowdown in China's economy down to the lower 6% level. They're also predicting that the Bank of Japan will not tighten monetary policy. We'll get into our own forecast on some things that can happen there. Emerging market growth will pass the 5% level thanks to an increase in the Russian economy and Brazil. A couple other things that stand out. The big Saudi Aramco offering will not be on a public exchange. They're predicting the Saudis will opt instead for a private sale of the largest oil company in the world. A couple other things that stand out. They're predicting the AT&T Time Warner merger will go through. It's being challenged by the Justice Department. The reason they're saying that'll happen is the government hasn't won a case when it comes to a vertical merger versus a horizontal merger. Meanwhile, the FANG companies, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, now dominate the digital entertainment landscape, which makes the government's argument that the merger of the two old media companies would fundamentally alter competition not stand up. They're also predicting we'll finish the year at 2650. So basically, the Financial Times is basically saying the stock market does not much of anything for 2018. Here's one that'll shock many of you. The Financial Times is predicting we could see $70 oil by the end of the year as supply outages, geopolitical risk persist, along with output curbs by global producers and the willingness of Russia to keep backing Saudi Arabian effort to cut production in the face of growing U.S. shale supply. And that is sort of a mixture coming from the Financial Times. If I was to sum it up, stock market basically goes nowhere. Interest rates go up along with oil prices.
Overall, it does seem like a more tepid market forecast, probably tempered down a bit by their views on oil, inflation, interest rates. So those would seem to be the three downers.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, as the price of oil goes up, that's going to get translated. It works its way through the system. It costs more to ship goods, costs more to fly, costs more to move people. So all of that is going to cost money. So that is not really surprising. But and it also fits with the topping process that we've talked about that you typically see in a market cycle. The first thing that peaks is the bond market. Why? Because the Fed is raising interest rates. Eventually, they raise interest rates. The second market to peak is the stock market. And then finally, the third market to peak is commodities. Well, if we get higher oil prices, higher gold prices, higher commodity prices, we are following the typical market peaking cycle. So this would fit in rather nicely.
All right, moving on to some others.
This one comes from Forbes magazine. And once again, you're going to see this from a lot of the business publications. They are weaving in a lot of geopolitical risk and political risk into their equation when they're looking at the markets in the year ahead. Number 10, coming from Forbes for 2018 predictions. The Mueller investigation will continue throughout the year, but it will not be over, but Trump will not be indicted. Number 9, despite making gains, the Democrats will fail to win the majority of seats in the House of Representatives. The Republicans will slightly increase their majority in the Senate. So this is almost the opposite of what the Financial Times thinks. And the reason they say that, the map highly favors Republicans. So even though the majority will increase, it will not seem like a victory because they will not win as many seats as they could have. In other words, they're not likely to get a 60-seat majority in the Senate so they can pass and not have to do what they have to do with these reconciliation approaches. Number 8, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party will splinter. On the Democratic side, it will split with Warren and Sanders. And on the Republican side, it will split between the moderates and the more Tea Party conservative end of the party. So more political problems coming ahead. Despite speculation, Justice Stevens will not retire. So Trump will not be able to promote or appoint another Supreme Court justice. On the international scene, the May government will fall. You know, the people out of London say May retains the prime ministership. Forbes says that will not happen. Number four, with ISIS losing its control, they will step up and wreak havoc across the globe with their favorite weapon of choice, cars and trucks. The financial service industry, the biggest threat to stability, is the current Bitcoin mania. Nothing is able to derail a market more than when a bubble burst, and they believe Bitcoin is indeed a bubble. Number two, despite political gridlock, given the positive trajectory of corporate profits, the market will continue to do well. However, like many others, they're predicting at least one good 10% correction.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
In case you didn't know it, the Financial Sense News Hour is more than just our weekend show. We also have a weekday program featuring key economic experts, which is only available to our premium members. Here's part of one of the interviews from this last week.
The most notable thing about the Iran protests is the geographic spread. These are all rooted in very, very small towns and cities, and they're really driven by economic conditions where people are just not seeing the relief that they were promised. And it's happening among a lot of very young people. The majority of people arrested have been under the age of 25. You know, and so there's a very big social concern there that the government is trying to deal with. The issue that we see here now is that given the enthusiasm that the White House has shown for these protests, it only raises that specter of foreign influence that then works toward the hardliners in Iran and the political system. And so, you know, ironically, this actually can hurt the U.S.'s interests more by very openly advocating for those protesters.
So, Jim, who's next on the list now?
Next, we're going to take a look at Goldman Sachs. Their projection for the S&P is about 2850. Once again, that consensus that we talked about in between 2750, 2850 for the market, about 100-point stretch. They see strong global economic growth. In other words, the economies around the globe are firing on all cylinders. However, they also see firmer inflation. And that could lead to, let's say, higher interest rates. They think that the ECB and the Bank of Japan will still remain dovish, but like everybody else, they see the biggest risk to the market this year are political risk. Once again, you're going to find a common thread that you're seeing here in a lot of these forecasts is that they expect to see a lot more volatility in the markets as a result of what you're seeing on the political front. So it's not going to be economics. It's going to be politics that drives. And one of the things that they cited in their study, and this is rather significant, volatility in the stock market in 2017 hit a low, 50-year low in volatility. The VIX hit 89.53, its peak, in December of 94, it hit a low of 8.56 in November of 2017. So when you get volatility, in other words, they're basically saying complacency is coming into the market. And that is something that you've got to be very, very careful of. Because when you see that kind of complacency, that's usually when something happens that nobody expects when you get something like that.
Okay, so that's Goldman Sachs, and who do we have left here?
We got just a few more to get through because I want to give you just kind of a consensus, and you'll see how this consensus is driving and what the thought process is. And this comes from Bank of America Merrill Lynch, Michael Hartnett, and he really stresses his big word is big. A big top, a big short, a big long, and big risk. And his big top, first of all, he talks about volatility hitting a 50-year low, bond market volatility hitting a 30-year low. And he thinks somewhere in the first half of 2018, we get something like a flash crash. So his big long is he is long volatility. So what that would mean is you would do something like maybe you buy a call on the VIX at a certain price. Let's say the VIX is at 9, you buy a call at 10, and it spikes up to 30, you can make a lot of money. So he's betting on volatility. His big short is corporate bonds. Why? He thinks we're headed for a higher inflation, just like Goldman. He thinks because of higher debt, it will drive that. He thinks we're also going to have higher volatility. And he also said the era of quantitative easing is coming to an end. With the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada, the U.S. Fed, eventually it'll be Japan and eventually Europe. And the narrowing of credit spreads, basically you are not getting compensated for taking risk in the corporate bond market or the junk bond market with spreads so narrow. So he's basically saying the big short is in corporate bonds. Now, he talks about big risk. Where's the risk coming from? He sees wage deflation coming about as a result of artificial intelligence and robots. So he's predicting that bond yields will follow on sovereigns, and he believes the bubble will eventually burst. And when that happens, there's going to be a backlash against tech. And so that's coming from Michael Hartnett. And what he's predicting, once again, and you're going to see this across the board, global GDP will rise not much by a tenth of a point to 3.8%. U.S. Treasury yields are going to get down to basically a negative rate, Fed funds rate of 2.25%, and also gold will be at 1325. Heck, it's almost there right now. So that's coming from Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Next is Citigroup and their projections for the year. Modest upside to the S&P 500 to be driven by earnings per share growth. Sentiment looks worrisome. Valuations will support upside appreciation. Value likely to outperform growth with cyclicals beating defensives, and inflation expectations and bond yields are expected to climb in 2018. Morgan Stanley, basically, they are probably one of the more cautious. They expect more volatility, bigger drawdowns in the stock market, although they do see some gains. Their year-end target is $27.50 for the S&P 500. So once again, that consensus view of between $27.50, $28.50 is where you're finding most people congregating, with an average around $2,800 for the S&P this year, which would imply gains of 7 to 8% for the stock market when you throw in dividends. So let's go to outside the box. And of course, we're going to have to go, as we do each year, to Byron Wayne.
The fundamentals are very strong. But at the same time, the market is overbought, and investors are optimistic. They're not euphoric yet, but they're optimistic. So an overbought market with optimistic investors is vulnerable. And the question is, what triggers the vulnerability? That's always hard to identify. I mean, a geopolitical incident, something with North Korea, with Russia, that could do it. Something in the Middle East that causes the price of oil to rise. That could be the trigger. But maybe you don't need a trigger. Maybe the market just spontaneously begins to fade. In any case, I agree, it's vulnerable to a 10% correction. But we've been looking for a 10% correction all year. And here it is, December, and we haven't had one.
That was, again, the voice of Byron Wien. And since we're discussing him, what were his 10 surprises for the year?
Well, before we do that, I always like to take a look at what he predicted the previous year for 2017. His predictions for 2017, Trump would move away from his more extreme positions. I'd give him almost a 50-50 on that. Real GDP growth will be 3%, so he hit that one. The S&P 500 would get to 2,500. So once again, he was on the high side. We got over 2,600. So give him credit for that. Macro currencies will see large fluctuations. I'll give him that. Inflation moving towards 3% in 2017. That fell short of the mark. Populism over Europe. And Angela Merkel loses the vote in October. He was wrong on that one. Reducing regulations and energy, a surge in production in the United States with oil close to $60. I'll give that to him. Benefiting from a stronger growth in China and the United States, Japan's economy exceeds 2%. He got that one right. In the Middle East cools down, Donald Trump as the Secretary of State diminishes some of the conflict in the area. Well, he got that one wrong as well. So I would say he was batting about maybe 300 or 400. And once again, 2017 was a year unlike many of us have seen in our lifetime in terms of what went on in the stock market, what went on in the bond market, the lack of volatility, the lack of a correction.
And so I guess if we look at 2018, what's on the agenda?
Number one, China finally decides that a nuclear capability in the hands of an unpredictable leader on its border is not tolerable, even though North Korea is a communist buffer. China cuts off all fuel and food shipments to North Korea. Number two, Theresa May loses the prime ministership and it goes to Jeremy Corbyn. Number three, the dollar finally comes to life as real GDP growth exceeds 3% in the United States, as hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. held dollars overseas are repatriated back to the U.S. Number four, the U.S. economy has a better year in 2017, but with the exception, there will be a 10% correction, driving the index back down to 2,300. So he's not the first that believes that we'll see a correction. Number six, issues of concern. GDP growth puts pressure on commodity prices in industrialized countries. Hourly earnings gains approach 4% and the consumer price index approaches 3%. Well, if we got to 3%, I can tell you, you're probably going to see more than just 3 rate hikes coming from the Fed. Number eight, both NAFTA and the Iran agreement endure in spite of Trump's railing against them. Number nine, this is a big one. The Republicans lose control of both the Senate and the House. And number 10, China's leader focuses on China's credit problems and decides to limit business borrowing, leading to less credit creation and slower economic growth in China. Those were his 10 big surprises. His also runs investigators recognize the earnings of companies in Europe and Far East. Number 12, the Mueller investigation fails to implicate any members of the Trump family. Number 13, artificial intelligence gains visible momentum. 14, cyber attacks become more prevalent. Number 15, regulatory authorities in Europe and the United States get concerned about the creative destruction of internet-related businesses. And this goes along with what Michael Hartnett is talking about, is a backlash of these big tech companies that are putting a lot of businesses out of business and almost becoming like the industrial giants at the turn of the 19th century, like U.S. Steel. And he's referring to Amazon, Facebook, and Google. And number 16, the risk in Bitcoin are so great, the regulatory authorities begin to restrict trading.
Next, we go to Saxo Bank. And these ones I found from year to year to year are always interesting because they seem to be so off the wall or out of the realm of reality that if they really did come about, you'd wonder what would happen to the economic system or the market.
Yeah, these are basically, once again, one of those things that it's like the surprise. It's like a 9/11. It's like a Katrina. It's something you don't expect. Nobody's thinking about. And all of a sudden it appears and then it captures. Number one, the Fed loses its independence as the U.S. Treasury takes charge. Basically, they're saying the deficits will get so large, the debt will get so big, is the Treasury does what it did after World War II and caps U.S. Treasury yields through its own buying program at 2.5%. Secondly, the Bank of Japan is forced to abandon yield curve control once again, like the Fed, they lose their ability to control interest rates. Number three, China rolls out the petrorenminbi, where basically it is a market and oil futures exchange, which would come into competition with the likes of London and New York. Number four, volatility spikes after a flash crash in the stock market as massive inflows into passive investment vehicles, smart beta funds suddenly withdraw and reverse. You know, that could happen. Number five, U.S. voters go hard left in 2018. Basically, the Democrats take control of both houses of Congress. And let me see, Austro-Hungarian Empire threatens European takeover. Bitcoin is thrown to the wolves, basically. After its spectacular peak in 2018, Bitcoin crashes and limps into 2019 close to its fundamental production cost of about $1,000. Boy, that would be something. It almost exactly where it started in 2017. And let me see, South Africa sees South Africa blossom with its economy. Tencent outstrips Apple to become the world's largest company. The last one is women smash through the glass ceiling and take the reins of over 50 S&P Fortune 500 companies. So if we take a look at that, you want to see a common thread that you see in all of these. I don't care if you're talking about Wall Street, if you're talking about the Financial Times, the business magazines, they see some kind of geopolitical risk and they see those flashpoints coming into the market and having a major influence on what we see happen in 2018. And certainly we know that this is a political election year and we know the volatility. You can imagine, John, if the Democrats do take control over both houses of Congress like they did under Bush in 2006, or like the Republicans did in 2010 in the House and then eventually the Senate, how that changes the political dynamics, and especially with four proposals in the House to impeach the president, that could lead to some volatility as we head into the fall. Because this fall, normally when you get into September, October is a very volatile time of the year. We did not see that this year. You know, I don't even think we got a hiccup or a sneeze when it came to market volatility. So certainly wasn't a year for market volatility.
So as you're looking at all of these, Jim, we've looked at three different aspects. Do you see any common threads running through them or some continuing threads from last year?
Well, I would say the one common theme is higher stock prices this year, with most of that coming in the first half of the year. And I think a lot of that is predicated on terms of the Fed raising rates. They'll probably raise them this month in January. They'll probably go again in March, much like they did last year. And after two rate hikes, maybe sit back a little bit and see what happens. And then as we get into the fall, everybody knows it's a political election year. The other common thread, everyone sees a 10% correction, or a vast majority of them do. And some of them see a flash crash taking place, also greater volatility than we've seen in times past. So it's not going to be a year like last year, John, where it was just basically an escalator, where the stock market just basically went up and never even looked back. There was nothing that caused the market to look backwards. It was up all the way throughout the whole year.
All right, we've cycled through all of that now. Anything else that you see just offhand that strikes you of interest through all of this?
Yeah, there's two or three things. One is everybody sees higher interest rates. Obviously, if the Fed raises interest rates three times, you're going to see the short end of the curve, like the two-year notes, five-year notes, go up. And that will either flatten the yield curve or it will steepen it. Another one is everyone is expecting higher oil prices, and that ranges anywhere from 65 to 70. As we are doing this show, we're close to 60. They also think inflation picks up. It's not going to be like it was in 2007 and 2008, where we got 5% inflation rates, but they're expecting inflation to hit 2.5%. And that means even if the Fed raised rates only three times, bringing the Fed funds rate to 2.25, the Fed would be behind the eight ball. So that if we were to see inflation spike up, oil prices to spike up to 70, you might see a more aggressive Fed come into play here. So that is something. The other thing is political risk all across the board, whether it's NOCO, Iran, or another Arab Spring. So this is a year where I think active management is going to come into play, because I think, you know, last year was a great year if you were a passive investor, and there's just billions and billions of dollars that are flowing into these index funds. What a surprise these people are going to find if we do get a correction, or if the market pulls back rather suddenly. I think that's something that nobody is really anticipating.
Yeah, but rising interest rates, Jim, mean that it's going to get more expensive to borrow for car loans, for house loans, for business loans.
And that's one of the reasons why you're taking a look at some of the forecasts that are coming out, where they see economic growth slowing into next year, even though they see it picking up this year. So the tax cuts, the stimulus, all of that helping the economy this year. But eventually, you can't keep raising the cost of borrowing as the Fed is doing. And the real question is, will the Fed be smart enough this time around to say, you know what, we've raised rates enough as we can. And if we do get turbulence in the bond market, and especially the Treasury market, because right now, the next item of agenda in Washington is a $1 trillion spending bill for infrastructure. And what that might mean for the bond market, which would make it more expensive. And as the Fed continues to cut back on its tapering program of buying, what is that going to mean? It's going to shrink. So normally the Fed, when they get up to, I think it's the second quarter, they will be up to cutting back $30 billion of buying a month. I mean, that is a big buyer. So that could put some upward pressure on interest rates. If you add the Fed buying, you add back the reducing their balance sheet. And then also on top of that, you throw in higher oil prices and inflation, and we could see higher interest rates.
So next week on the program, as we have done for years and years and years, we do part two of our forecast for 2018. We'll give you our perspective on what we think is going to happen, which of course is the correct one. You need to understand that. And where these other people have disagreed with us, you must disregard them. So anyway, so we'll be doing that. Let's face it, Jim, it was really a wild year last year. There was never a lack of things to talk about. And we may be maybe not surprised in that category. And this year is an equal year like that.
You know, the possibility of a smooth year, uneventful, John, I just don't see that at all, especially with congressional elections coming up. I mean, there are a lot of vulnerable Republicans in my own state of California and New York. If the Democrats can win in the Republican seats in California and New York, that almost is enough to give them control of the House, which they would then begin impeachment proceedings against the president. And that would be something that you could very well see a flash crash accompanying the election. It was kind of like, you remember the election in 2016, where as the evening proceeded, and it looked at first that Hillary Clinton would be the president, the Dow Jones Industrial Futures market was down 800 points in the evening, followed by a major, major rally the opposite day. So you could see something like that. So this is a year I think you're going to have to pay attention to what's going on overseas. We'll have every bit to do with what's going on in the market here. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. the investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.